ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। From Srimad Bhagavata 5, Chapter 10, Maharaj Rahuguna meets Jada Bharata, text number 15. Since it's a prose text, we will just read the translation and purport, since the word to word is also very long. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Shukadeva Goswami continued. Translation: Shukadeva Goswami continued, O best of the Pandu dynasty, Maharaj Parikshit, the king of the Sindhu and Sauvira states, Maharaj Rahugun, had great faith in discussions of the absolute truth. Being thus qualified, he heard from Jada Bharata that philosophical presentation which is approved by all scriptures on the mystic yoga process and which slackens the knot in the heart. His material conception of himself as a king was thus destroyed. He immediately descended from his palanquin and fell flat on the ground with his head at the lotus feet of Jada Bharat in such a way that he might be excused for his insulting words against the great Brahmana. He then prayed as follows. Purport: In Bhagavad Gita 4.2, Lord Krishna says, Evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo viduhu sakale neha mahata yogo nashta parantapa. This supreme science was thus received through the chain of disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in due course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science as it is appears to be lost. Through the disciplic succession, the royal order was on the same platform as the great saintly persons, the Rajarishis. Formerly, they could understand the philosophy of life and knew how to train the citizens to come to the same standard. In other words, they knew how to deliver the citizens from the entanglement of birth and death. When Maharaj Dasharath ruled Ayodhya, the great sage Vishwamitra once came to him to take away Lord Ramchandra and Lakshman to the forest to kill a demon. When the saintly person Vishwamitra came to the court of Maharaj Dasharath, the king, in order to receive the saintly person, asked him, Aihishtam yattat punar janma jayaya. He asked the sage whether everything was going on well in his endeavor to conquer the repetition of birth and death. The whole process of Vedic civilization is based on this point. We must know how to conquer the repetition of birth and death. Maharaj Rahugun also knew the purpose of life. Therefore, when Jada Bharat put the philosophy of life before him, he immediately appreciated it. This is the foundation of Vedic society. Learned scholars, brahmanas, saintly persons and sages who are fully aware of the Vedic purpose advised the royal order how to benefit the general masses, and by their cooperation the general masses were benefited. Therefore everything was successful. Maharaj Rahuguna attained this perfection of understanding the value of human life. Therefore he regretted his insulting words to Jada Bharat, and he immediately descended from his palanquin and fell down at the lotus feet of Jada Bharat in order to be excused and to hear from him further about the values of life known as Brahma Jigyasa, inquiry into the absolute truth. At the present moment, high government officials are ignorant of the values of life. And when saintly persons endeavor to broadcast the Vedic knowledge, the so-called executives do not offer their respectful obeisances, but try to obstruct the spiritual propaganda. Thus, one can say that the former kingly government was like heaven, and the present government is like hell. Hare Krishna. We would like to welcome all the devotees for the morning Srimad Bhagavatam class, where we are continuing our discussion of the pastimes of Maharaj Bharat in his third life. After Maharaj Bharat thought of the deer at the time of his death, because of his attachment to the deer, got the form of the deer, and then in that form, because he was constantly thinking about the Lord and associating with his devotees, the Lord's devotees, now he is born as Jada Bharat, a pure-hearted Brahmana, radically different from all the Brahmanas of his time and age. Because he was not just a Brahmana, but he was a pure devotee in his heart. And therefore he did not want to take any risk of associating with any type of people, even if they were Brahmanas, because they may deviate him from the path of pure devotional service. So he had never spoken to anyone, never behaved like a normal person in society. However, when Maharaj Rahuguna insulted him with words of ignorance for the first time out of his causeless compassion, Jada Bharat is about to start speaking. Why does Jada Bharat speak to Maharaj Rahugun? Because Jada Bharat finds that this personality is a qualified disciple to hear. Although he is speaking ignorant words, he is qualified. What are his qualifications? That we are seeing in the verses that are at present and are going to continue. In this verse, he expresses his humility and his mistake. Maharaj Rahuguna, he accepts his mistake and starts glorifying Jada Bharat from this verse onwards. It is explained in the scriptures that fools are not discovered till they begin to speak. Because face is the index of the mind, the words are the index of one's intelligence, and one's behavior is an index of one's character. So, when a person acts based on what he speaks, as they say, walks his talk, then we can know the real character of that personality. Like one time I heard a saying which said, it is one thing to see, it's one thing to look. It is another thing to see what you look. And to understand what you see is completely another thing, a third thing. And to learn from what you understand is even a higher level of understanding. But the highest is to act based on that understanding. Because unless one acts, it all remains theoretical. So fools are undiscovered till they speak. And those who do not have character are undiscovered till their behavior is seen in all circumstances. Like I think it was Govind Prabhu who wrote an email that there were certain captions that he saw in the schools nearby in Chicago, where in one place it was written that your character is shown by how you behave when you think you are alone. Of course, we are never alone because the super soul and the 11 other witnesses are there. But when we think that we are alone, especially in our minds, because in Kali Yuga, fortunately, most people can't read other people's minds, then one behaves in different ways. So one's behavior exhibits one's character. Now in Kali Yuga, fortunately for the souls living here, in fact, so fortunately that saintly persons worship Kali Yuga for this fortune. Because Kushalya Nyasha Siddhyanti Netarani Kritaniyat. It was a very bewildering fact for the sages of Naimisharanya to wonder, why did Maharaj Parikshit forgive Kali, who was butchering a cow, butchering a bull, beaten already 3 legs, was found guilty and defeated. Still, he was forgiven by Maharaj Parikshit. Amazing. And then, the first reason was explained amongst the varieties of reasons was that because Kali surrendered, and because Kali surrendered as a Kshatriya, Maharaj Parikshit forgave him. Then the next question that rises is, if Kali surrendered and Maharaj Parikshit forgave him, why did Maharaj Parikshit give him 4 stages, 4 places to stay? Where there is meat eating, gambling, intoxication, illicit sex. And allow him to flourish. Of course, not flourish, because at that time there were no such places. But allow him places of residence, so that in the future he can flourish and bewilder the people of Kali Yuga. Why did Maharaj Parikshit do that? And then, in Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadeva Goswami very beautifully explains the amazing quality of Maharaj Parikshit, which inspired him to forgive Kali. Saranga iva sarabhuk, kushalya nyashu siddhyanti, netarani kritaniyat. He says that na nudveshtim kalim samrat sarangaiva sarabhuk. He is explaining the beautiful quality of Parikshit Maharaj. He says, na anudveshti kalim samrat. Hey samrat, Shukadeva Goswami is speaking to Parikshit Maharaj. See this quality of Parikshit Maharaj, of course, himself. He said, see his beautiful quality. Na anudveshti, although he defeated Kali, although Kali was such a sinful person, still he did not have any envy towards him. He did not hate him. Na anudveshti kalim samrat. In fact, he even saw a good quality in Kali. Just like a bumblebee comes to a flower. Now a flower may have so many qualities, like it may have thorns, it may have petals which are not so soft sometimes. However, when a bumblebee or a honeybee associates with the flower, its association is only for that honey, only for the nectar, and then all the other things are overlooked. So saranga iva sarabhuk, just like a honeybee simply takes the nectar and goes along, similarly Parikshit Maharaj, he simply saw one good quality in Kali and forgave him, rather give him places of residence. And what was that good quality? Kushalyan ashu siddhyanti netarani kritaniyat. Kushalyan ashu siddhyanti. Even in the mind, if a person thinks of something good, ashu siddhyanti, immediately he gets the benefit of doing that good activity. Even if he doesn't have the facility of performing that good activity within the physical world, simply somehow if a good thought comes in these Kali Yugans, denizens or residents of Kali Yuga, they get all the credits of performing that good activity. And what about the negative thoughts that are constantly coming in their minds? Netarani kritaniyat. He says, no, unless they perform the sinful activity, they shall not get the reactions of simply mentally thinking about the sinful activities or the negative activities. So see, what a fortune, what a hope for the people of Kali Yuga. And because Parikshit Maharaj saw this one good quality, he forgave Kali. He didn't see all the bad qualities in Kali. He didn't hate him for all the bad things he had. But he saw in the future, although Kali Yuga is going to harass people, this one very good quality he has. That in his age, people, even by mentally thinking of good things, will be given all the credits of performing them. So it is understood that Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults. Now when people are in an ocean, there are 2 troubles. One is, it's natural to get wet. How much are we going to protect ourselves while being in an ocean? So difficult. So the faults are being bombarded from all the directions, within and without. And second, to cross the ocean is practically impossible. However expert a person is in swimming, when it comes to crossing an ocean, impossible. Similarly, Prabhupada explains in one of the purports of Bhagavad Gita, however expert a person is in material activities, whatever good qualifications he has, he can't cross the ocean of birth and death. Somebody from outside has to come and deliver him. Therefore, the process of devotional service is so glorious, so wonderful, that it is purely given in Kali Yuga. Just take devotional service. We are not qualified in Kali Yuga to do anything. Tapasya. Some devotees are fasting till sunrise. Today. Drank water today only. Too sick. What tapasya can we do? Maybe one fasting throughout the year. So difficult. Since weeks, months we are planning and thinking, what will we do throughout the day? How will we manage it? Kali Yuga, we are not meant for that. Regular fasting for days, weeks, years. Sitting and hearing for hours and hours, chanting the Vedic mantras. Very difficult. So in Kali Yuga, Shamo, Damas, Tapas, Shaucham, Shantim, Arjavam, very difficult. Kali Yuga, we are only meant for one thing, that is suffering. There is no other spiritual practice that we can perform in Kali Yuga with the kind of facilities that we have. We are only born so that we can suffer and continue suffering. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given this pure devotional process. Take it and come out. So when practicing devotional service, there is a fast process and there is a slow process. That is explained by Lord Krishna himself to Shrutadeva Bahulashva. Who was the king? Shrutadeva was the king. Shrutadeva was the king. So Shrutadeva was worshipping Lord Krishna and giving great affection to Lord Krishna when he came into his house. At that time, Lord Krishna, understanding his mentality, spoke a very beautiful verse to explain to him about amongst devotional service, which are the most important and potent processes which can give us fast advancement. Lord Krishna told him, Deva Kshetrani Tirthani Darshana Sparshanarchane Shaneka Puna Punantika Lena Tadapya Arhattamaha. He said, Deva Kshetrani Tirthani. Three ways you can purify yourself. Deva, by worshipping the deities. Kshetrani, by going to the holy places. And Tirthani, by taking bath in the holy rivers near those holy places. So, by these three processes, Shane Punanti, Kalena, in time, one gets purified. Even these three places are extremely potent. Say Devaha, worshipping the deity in the temple. There are so many stories in the scriptures where one rat came and the rat was hungry. Maybe did an Ekadashi. I think it was an Ekadashi. Whatever. The rat came and it was hungry. It was looking around at the altar. What can I eat? So he saw something sparkling, yellow, beautiful. So he thought maybe it is some butter. And he came running towards it to realize it was a wick with ghee and some light on it. It was an offering of a lamp to the Lord. And the wick was gradually going down. So because the wick was about to go down and the rat was eager for the food because it was hungry. So it jumped upon that wick and its whiskers caught fire. And then he was jumping up and down over there because he was in great anxiety. So the Lord said, oh wonderful, he's dancing in front of me and he's offering me ghee lamps, offerings. And in this way, this rat was delivered on the spot, taken back to Vaikuntha. Simply because in front of the deity, it danced. Even in such a involuntary manner. Not out of his own heart. Still, such a potent process. We know the stories of there was a bird which was being chased by Garuda. Or an eagle. So the bird was going round and round and round and round in front of the around the temple, and because it did the pradakshina, when the bird was eaten, the soul was delivered back to Godhead. Just because of temple worship. Coming in front of the deity, offering obeisances, respects and worship. Devaha, Kshetrani, what to speak of the holy places? So powerful that a thief who had come to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam class because he wanted to run away from the police. That thief heard in the Bhagavatam class that there is a very attractive person called Krishna And this attractive person has got beautiful earrings, beautiful necklaces, and he is available in the place called Vrindavan. He was attentively hearing, oh, he's a rich boy, and he's only small, 5 years, wears a lot of ornaments, maybe I should catch him. Thinking of Vrindavan, 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 he was constantly chanting Vrindavan, Mathura, Govardhan, Govardhan, and all such holy names he was remembering. I should not forget the place, the surroundings. It was the first time he had heard the address. So simply meditating on the holy Dham and the Lord, he was so purified that when he came to Vrindavan, he actually saw Krishna. He perceived the Lord and he completely surrendered unto Krishna because he was completely purified. So the holy places are also so potent and powerful. Deva Kshetrani Tirthani. And what to speak of the holy rivers? Even they are extremely powerful. You know, one time Garuda was carrying a snake in his mouth. And because he was flying low, the snake touched the Manasi Ganga. And just by the touch of Manasi Ganga, the snake got a four-handed form. And the same snake which was in the mouth of Garuda now climbed on the back of Garuda and he took him back to Godhead. Became his Vahana. So, the holy rivers, the holy waters are also so powerful and potent. However, Lord Krishna explains, they are extremely powerful and potent. Still, shane punanti kalena tadapya arhattamaha. He explains, this is the slow process. Shane punanti kalena. In time, one will get purified. However, there is a fast process of devotional service. And what is that fast process? Is to worship the devotees of the Lord. Simply by serving and worshipping the devotees of the Lord, all these things which we can achieve by worshipping the holy deities, going to the holy places, bathing in the holy rivers, is quickly achieved. And this is the opinion of the Supreme Lord Himself. Because Shrutadeva was worshipping Lord Krishna, he had slightly neglected the other devotees who had come along with Lord Krishna. So Lord Krishna said, the benefit that you can get from me, 100 times you can get from my devotees. In fact, in the third canto, Lord Krishna explains, my feet are lotus and worshipable. There is only one reason for it. Because I worship the feet of my devotees. The whole world becomes purified by getting the dust of my lotus feet. But how do my lotus feet become worshipable? Because I worship the feet of my devotees. So devotional service is glorious. Association of devotees is even more glorious. In fact, so much glorious that the scriptures explain, Tulya me lave napi, a lover. Na swargam, na punarbhavam. Simply by association of devotees, one gets that much pleasure. There is a balance. And there is a comparison. When you compare something, there is a balance. There is a comparison between two things. So on one side, there is all the pleasures of the heavens, plus the pleasures of liberation, plus all the pleasures of this material world. And on the other side of the balance is lover. Just a moment's association with a devotee. And that moment's association, he's saying there is no comparison. It's not that there is a comparison, okay. Maybe a moment's association is as much as all the pleasures of this world, all the pleasures of heaven, all the pleasures of liberation. No, there is no comparison. Again and again we are hammered with the truth. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastra Koi, Lava Matra. Simply Lava Matra Sadhu Sangha. All Siddhi Hoi. Sarva Siddhi Hoi. All Siddhis are achieved. Excuse me. So the point is that in the association of devotees, one can achieve all perfection. Now what's happening? We are associating with devotees every day. Why are we not achieving perfection? Immediately, in just one lover. Because they must also be the qualification of the disciple. Guru is potent. The devotees are potent. The association of devotees is potent. In fact, sometimes devotees, when they become hopeless, when they become sometimes a little finding it difficult in devotional service, they are challenged. Don't you have faith in the association of devotees? However difficult your own anarthas may be, however challenging it may be in devotional service to advance, however impossible it may seem to achieve the goal of constantly remembering Krishna, Don't we have the faith in the association of devotees? Association of devotees is more powerful than all our sins together. So, association of devotees is powerful. Along with that, the disciple also must have qualifications to gain advantage in that association of devotees. That is what is explained in this verse and this purport. That previously, kings like Maharaj Rahugund, they knew the purpose of life. Therefore, when they heard from Jadabharata that they should give up material mentality and come to the platform of the soul, immediately understood, yes, I am getting wonderful information here. I am getting transcendental information here. And he started paying obeisances and respects to Jadabharat. Nowadays, people are so foolish, they don't even know what type of right questions to ask about God. In fact, opinions about God has become the prerogative of taxi drivers. Behind most taxis you will see, God is great, God is love, love is sweet poison, you know, all such things. God is everywhere, God is nowhere. And some people come and ask us questions. You know, why should you believe in your God? He is not helping us in our times of need. We are in so much difficulty. Where is your God in difficulty? So even the basic understanding of the Supreme Lord they don't have. Because it requires some little bit of intelligence. Say for example, if you want to see electricity, can we show electricity? You may say, okay, look at this fan, look at this bulb. But these are only fans and bulbs. Can you see electricity because this fan is moving? We can't see it, but it requires some intelligence that this moving fan is a symptom of the presence of electricity. This bulb glowing is a symptom of the presence of electricity, although we can't see electricity. So similarly, simply the presence of this world, the creation, implies there is a creator. The symptom that there is so many things happening in this world implies that there must be somebody who must be managing it and maintaining it. And then they argue, okay, even if he's there, why doesn't he come to help me when I am suffering? That means, you know, he's like a doctor or an engineer. You just call him up, you know, I have a problem, come fix up my bathroom, plumber, you know, fix up my stomach, my back, my liver, all such things. So God is not an order supplier. Why does the Lord make his devotees suffer sometimes? In fact, this question bewilders the non-devotees completely. Lord Krishna answers this question personally in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. He says that I make my devotees sometimes look like suffering for two reasons. For those who are sadhakas, the Lord explains that they may suffer so that their attachment increases for me. Actually, their worship for me becomes complete, he says. Because sadhakas, we have so many anarthas, so many challenges. So when we see that the Lord is not so easy to achieve, it's not like what we thought when we came to devotional service. Just chant Hare Krishna and 6 months you'll become a pure devotee. It's not as easy as it looks. The reason is because we are not so pure, or we have not taken the process so seriously. So, when we don't achieve Krishna very easily, then we realize, oh, I'm fallen, I'm humble, I'm far away from Krishna. And that inspires the devotee to make his or her worship perfect. The example is given that sometimes in the Gurukula, the children are given a pen to write. And on the pen, there is a rubber. Now this rubber is made in such a way that unless you hold it in a particular way, you can't write properly. Otherwise the rubber hurts the fingers. So one is forced to hold the pen in a particular way so that the rubber is held properly and one can write properly. Now this is very irritating for the children in the Gurukul. They just can't write properly. It's very difficult to hold that pen because they're used to holding it in all sorts of ways because their hands are immature, young. However, by the force of the rubber, they slowly learn to hold the pen in a proper way. And because of that, they start writing in a very legible and expert manner. So sometimes in their childhood, in their innocence, they curse the teachers. Why are they giving us this rubber? Why are they giving us these horrible pens? However, when they grow, they realize, oh, this rubber was the best thing that happened to me in my childhood for my handwriting. Because of this rubber, I hold the pen properly. Because of this rubber, I can write properly now. Similarly, sometimes in our devotional service, we find that we know, we feel that I can work in a particular way like this. However, Krishna put some rubbers in our devotional practices. Some suffering, some difficulties. And we feel, why is it coming to me? Why not I just let life flow the way it is? But Krishna knows best that if we hold life in a particular way, if we practice devotional service in a particular way, if we follow the regulative principles in a particular way, then we shall advance most. So for the sadhakas, Krishna may give suffering or a rubber so that they become expert in their worship, in their devotion to the Lord. And for the devotees who are perfect, Krishna says, I sometimes appear in front of them and disappear. So then, it looks as if they are suffering in separation. This is just like a poor man who has got some riches. And then when he loses the riches, his thoughts are simply absorbed in obtaining those riches again. So then those devotees become mad. They don't think about eating. They don't think about sleeping. They're simply absorbed in thoughts of me. In this way, Krishna explains why devotees suffer. So mundane people ask these questions and they're not qualified. Although the association of devotees is so wonderful, although the holy places are there, the rivers are there, the deity worship is there, but people are not qualified as disciples to achieve this transcendental knowledge. This qualification required is very beautifully explained by Narad Muni in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam to his disciple Vyasadeva. Narad Muni is explaining how he came to Krishna consciousness. And he's saying that when I was a child, just 5 years old, at that time I had 4 qualities because of which the Bhakti Vedantas gave me their causeless mercy. He said, I was self-controlled. I could control my senses. I had no attachment for sports. Although I was a boy, I was not naughty. And I did not speak more than required. Because of that, the Bhakti Vedantas gave their mercy to me. The first qualification he explains is Danto, Shama, Damas. My mind and senses were controlled. This is the first qualification of the disciple to achieve transcendental knowledge. Control of one's mind and senses. This material world is like a warfare. So, the mind and the senses, it is explained, are like forts, where we are protected by these mind and senses. Sometimes when the enemy is right at the entrance of the fort and has broken the doors of the fort and the enemy has entered inside, then there is hand-to-hand combat. Then there is nothing. There is just fight for life and death. Similarly, Gopi Paranandan Prabhu was explaining, we were in Udupi right now, at that time he was giving classes. So Gopi Paranandan Prabhu was explaining that in Kali Yuga, when the mind is polluted, at that time, the only hope is hand-to-hand combat. The senses have to be controlled. Therefore Krishna tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita that there are 3 places where the lust is sitting. Indriyani mano buddhir asya dishthana muchyate. In the intelligence, in the mind, and in the senses, lust is sitting. It has conquered these places. Eter vimohatyesha, and is bewildering the living entity. So, when the mind is disturbed too much, the fort is attacked by lust, and they have entered, then tasmatvam indriyani adav, right in the beginning, Arjuna, control your senses. Do not allow your senses to go in all the directions. So Narad Muni explains that as a boy, I had my senses were controlled. Also, I had no attachment for frivolous activities. Prabhupada translates it as sports in childhood, because it's natural for young children to play. There's so much energy they have. But he was controlled. And also, he did not speak more than required. Rather, he had a service attitude towards the Bhakti Vedantas. Because of that service attitude, he got to eat some Mahaprasad. And when he ate the Mahaprasad, great attachment arose in his heart for those great devotees, the Bhakti Vedantas. What were the Bhakti Vedantas doing at that time? Gopi Parananda Prabhu was very beautifully explaining that the actual activity of a devotee is devotional service. Sometimes people ask a question, why are devotees called Bhakti Vedanta? What do devotees have to do with Vedanta? Actually, Vedanta is to be studied only by the devotees. Because the scripture Vedanta was written by Vyasadeva. And Vyasadeva is a Vaishnava. So people think Vedanta is for the Mayavadis, Vedanta. But actually the author of Vedanta was Vyasadeva. So he was supposed to, he is a Vaishnava, he is a part of our team. So Vedanta is to be studied by the devotees. However, a devotee is called Bhakti Vedanta because the original activity of a devotee is Bhakti. He is Bhakta first, then a Brahmana and then a philosopher. The original business is practicing devotional service. We also do Brahmanical activities. We also do some philosophical speculation or understanding the scriptures in different ways. But the primary activity of a devotee is Bhakti. Pure devotional service to the Lord. He was explaining that philosophical debate, logic, argument, it grows when there is opposition. When somebody comes to oppose or when somebody comes to challenge. Then a devotee may give philosophical arguments. But his original activity is performing devotional service. And he was explaining very nicely how philosophy naturally develops. It becomes sophisticated when there is an opposition. He explained that about 6th century BC, Buddhism started growing in India. About 2700 years back, Buddhism started growing. And initially, the Buddhists, they were not interested in logic and argument. In fact, one Buddhist Acharya was asked, "Do you believe in God?" He said, I don't say that I believe in God. I don't say that I don't believe in God. And I don't say that I am anywhere in between also. So you couldn't argue with them. It was completely illogical. You know, they were not even talking any logic. Just preaching on the power of Lord Buddha's aura and his purity. He was there to attract and bewilder the atheists of that time. So because Kali Yuga was going down, by the progress of Kali Yuga, the Vedic understanding was going down. So Buddhism covered all of India. In fact, it was so prominent that even Lord Jagannath's temple was under the Buddhas, Buddhists. The Buddhists were worshipping Lord Jagannath at that time, as maybe Bodhisattva or something. And then afterwards the Vaishnavas reclaimed it. So Buddhism was very, very prominent in India. It was predicted for 1,000 years the Buddhists would flourish and then slowly decline. So as Buddhism was flourishing, eventually when the decline came, interest in Vedic philosophy started. So the Brahmanas, they were studying the Vedas and they started asking questions to the Buddhists. So the Buddhists started thinking that now we are being challenged. So we must have some logic, some argument, something to prove ourselves. And therefore, the Buddhists, there was a Buddhist philosopher called Dignag. He created a very powerful logic for the first time in about 1st century AD. That's almost 600 years after Buddhism was being preached, without any logic, without any argument. So when the Vedic fold started after about 600 years, then Dignag started giving some logical interpretation to Buddhism that nothing exists. Whatever you see right now in front of your eyes, only that is existing. But that ultimately is an illusion. For example, he said this table. This table exists for you because you exist. When you finish, then this table doesn't exist at all. And even the existence of this table, he said, it's actually not existing because it is simply energy and mass which is constantly changing. You can't perceive that constant change. So you think that it is existing. So in this way, They were giving logical arguments to prove that actually everything is there, but actually all this everything is nothing. And then logic started developing in Buddhism. Then Dignag and his disciple Dharmottara, they wrote more books on logic, and they started proving that actually even logic is useless. Because even if you use logic, all your mental thoughts are all imagination. Because only what you see exists, and what you see is matter, which ultimately doesn't exist. So in this way, they started giving their logic. The Brahmanas became worried. They had to argue something back. So then the Brahmanas, they started looking into the Vedic ideas, and they saw Gautama's Naya Sutras. But there was no explanation of those sutras. There was no commentary. Like even in Vedanta, as Kali Yuga was passing, there was no commentary. Vedanta sutras were written 5000 years back by Vyasadeva. But as Kali Yuga progressed, all the commentaries were lost. Therefore, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, they wrote new commentaries on the Vedanta. Similarly, all the old commentaries on Nyaya were lost. And new commentaries came up, had to be written. Therefore, Vatsyayana in 150 AD, for the first time, he wrote the Nyaya Bhashya, commentary on Nyaya, logic. And then, through logic, they started defeating the Buddhists. And in this way, Shankaracharya ultimately defeated all the Buddhists and established his philosophy. Now, as Vaishnavas, we have challenges from the Mayavadis. Therefore, the Vaishnava Acharyas wrote commentaries. Otherwise, the Vaishnava Acharyas have nothing to do with picking battles and fighting with people. Like the Bhakti Vedantas, we see, who gave mercy to Narad Muni, they are simply chanting and discussing the glories of Lord Krishna and performing pure devotional service, where Narad Muni is coming to perform some personal menial service to them. Therefore, the original activity is bhakti. Like we find Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami. When the philosophers came to challenge them, they said, we're not interested in debate. Please, take a signature that we have been defeated. The original scriptures, the Brihat Bhagavatamrit, it's all to do with devotional service, the perfect science of devotional service, or the nectar of devotion, Bhakti Rasamrit Sindhu. It was Jiva Goswami, when he saw that my gurus are being challenged, at that time he came and he debated with these pandits and he defeated them. So there are so many beautiful examples of Vaishnavas who have risen up to challenges when debates have come, but in their original hearts of hearts have been natural devotees. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that there are some Vaishnava Acharyas or Sampradayas which are interested in Vaicharit Katmika Bhakti. That means they are interested in that type of bhakti which comes by logic, debate, establishing Vedanta, different thoughts, understandings. However, Gaudiya Vaishnavism, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, our sampradaya is based on rasatmika bhakti. Rasa. Our acharyas are interested in experiencing devotional mellows with Krishna. We do logic and reasoning when required. Like when the Ramanandis gave a challenge in Jaipur, that Srimati Radharani cannot be worshipped with Krishna. Where is it given in the scriptures? So through scriptural logic and argument, it was Baldev Vidya Bhushan who defeated them. They said, fine, you're giving logic and argument, but your sampradaya itself is not bona fide. You Gaudiyas don't have any bhashya on the Vedanta, any commentary on the Vedanta. So then he prayed to Govindadev. He said, my Lord, you have to protect. And then Govindadev gave mercy and he wrote the Govinda Bhashya in 18 days. When he came back to tell his Guru Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that I have won the debate, I have defeated the Ramanandis. Now Srimati Radharani has been reinstalled in Jaipur and her worship will go on. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur just laughed. And he said, actually it was a Manalila. Srimati Radharani for some time, she wanted to go away from Krishna and therefore this whole Leela was enacted. So the Vaishnavas, in their hearts, they know the advanced pastimes of the Lord. However, when it comes to logic argument, when the opposing arguments come, then they may rise up to those arguments and in this way sophisticated philosophy develops. Therefore, the disciple we were discussing should also be qualified. In the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Shukadev Goswami, he tests his disciple, Parikshit Maharaj. How much should I give him? And he, when Parikshit Maharaj was feeling so bad that so many people are suffering in hell, the fifth canto explains hell in such a great detail. So how can they be delivered? Shukadev Goswami said, very simple. Perform a sinful activity, you get a sinful reaction. That reaction is suffering. Then you perform a pious activity, do some atonement, and your sinful activity is gone. Parikshit Maharaj said, hey, 1 minute. I've been a king, and I have seen so many sinful people. I have punished them, and I see when they come back from the jail, they just do the same activities all over again. It's just like an elephant taking a bath, coming out and rolling in the mud, becoming dirty again. So simply punishing people will not be enough. Karma Kanda purification is not enough. Shukadev Goswami was encouraged. He said, yes, my disciple is qualified for more. And he gave him Brahma Gyan. He said that Shamo Damas Tapas Shocham Shanti Marjam Evacha, by performing purification, when your heart is perfectly purified by transcendental knowledge, then the pure soul becomes free from all sinful activities. Parikshit Maharaj said, true, a person's sinful activities will stop if he has transcendental knowledge, because he will know, if I perform sin, then I will suffer. But what about the desires in the heart? They are like the roots. Again the tree will grow. If you simply cut off the tree, the roots will help the tree to grow again. The desires will force a person to act sinfully. Or just like a pot which is full of liquor, you may empty the pot, but when you smell, it still smells of liquor. So by transcendental knowledge, all reactions can be finished. Still, some traces of desires will remain. And then Shukadev Goswami, he said, Kichit Kevalaya Bhaktya, simply by pure devotional service, all reactions, all desires can be finished. Niharamiva Bhaskara. Just like when the sun comes, then the mist is completely destroyed and everything can be seen in the daylight. Similarly, some of our Rasik Acharyas like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, they explain that when Uddhav came into Vrindavan, along having the message of Lord Krishna, he gave this message in three parts to the devotees of Vrindavan. First, Uddhav met Nanda Maharaj and he started glorifying Nanda Maharaj. First, he saw the condition of Nanda Maharaj, so much ecstasy of separation, so much suffering. And Nanda Maharaj was feeling so bad that Krishna has gone. So Uddhav started pacifying him by giving him Brahma Gyan. That, don't you know Krishna is everywhere? Krishna is in everything. So Nanda Maharaj, he actually started, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, he actually started chastising Uddhav. He said, you little boy, what do you know? Krishna is everywhere, Krishna is in everything, but he is not right now in my house. Can't you see? So although he was enlightening him Brahma Gyan, the pure devotees, they were going one step ahead and saying, Krishna is everywhere and Krishna is in everything, but because of intense love, because Krishna was not right in present of them, they were not satisfied enough. Then Uddhav said that you are so great, he gave him Paramatma Gyan, that the Lord who is in the heart of everyone, who controls the entire creation, he was playing in your own house. Nanda Maharaj said, have you come here to give me more pain? You are telling me that the Lord is so great, he is the controller of everyone, my Krishna, he is the controller of everyone, that means you are such a great person, and I did not serve him properly. I used to beat him, chastise him, I used to embrace him, and he would be dependent upon me. That Supreme Lord was dependent on me. So Uddhava was wondering what to do. By giving him more knowledge of Krishna, I am trying to increase his respect for Krishna, but his love is increasing more and more. Generally, when respect for a person increases, then you keep a distance from that person and you cool down. Like when Vasudeva and Devaki, when they saw Krishna killed Kamsa, then they said, oh, my Lord, you are so great. We thought you were our son. We embraced you. So they became a little bit, their love was diminished by the Aishwarya of the Lord. But the more Uddhava was glorifying Krishna's Brahman aspect, that he is everywhere, Krishna's localized aspect, that Krishna is the supreme controller, he is in everyone's heart, the more Nanda Maharaj's love was increasing. Finally, when Uddhava said that Krishna is very soon coming, he is missing you, he has given this message, those words of affection pacified Nanda Maharaj. When he gave him knowledge of bhakti, where if there are beautiful verses mentioned in the 10th canto, where Krishna expresses his gratitude to his mother and father, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai, and then says, I am very soon coming. It is just because of the love of the Mathura Vasis, which is bewildering me, that I cannot come. I am ungrateful. And in this way, the sweet words of Krishna satisfy Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai. Then Uddhav, he goes to meet the topmost devotees, the gopis of Vrindavan, and he gives them message. I brought a message from Krishna. Krishna has given you a message. So they said, oh really? Then come. And they went to a secluded place. Again, Uddhav gave the first message of Brahmagyan. Oh, great devotees, do not feel such separation from the Lord. He is everywhere. You can perceive him everywhere. So again, the gopis started chastising Uddhav. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, he says, Uddhav, have you come here to give us pain? That Krishna has learned this Brahmagyan from Sandipani Muni's ashram. And that Brahmagyan he has taught you to tell us that Krishna is everywhere. Go and take this Brahmagyan back to him and tell him, you drink this bitter neem juice of medicine yourself and completely forget us forever. Because ultimately, we have to become free from hankerings, free from lamentation. We are not this body, we are the spirit soul. This neem juice of medicine is not enough for our disease. This is well researched by the huts. Basically the hearts of the great sages, which are like huts. In their huts they have been sitting and they have researched this medicine of Brahmagyan. But this medicine is not enough. In fact, we need showers of rain to satisfy the separation that we have in our heart. Even the showers of rain are not enough. And they give an example that when there is a forest fire, the showers of rain, they may extinguish the forest fire. However, the showers of rain cannot extinguish the lightning which are in the cloud. So, when people of this world are suffering like anything in material fire, then these rains of Brahmagyan, they may satisfy the people of this world, their hankerings and lamentations. But our fire is like lightning in those clouds. Can that rain satisfy that lightning? You take this Brahmagyan back to that same Krishna who has given it to you. We don't want it. And they said, no. Actually, one can perceive Krishna just like when fire is there in the wood, but by following a process, the fire comes out. Similarly, Paramatma is there in all our hearts. By performance of devotional service, one can perceive the Paramatma. So he gave the knowledge of Paramatma. And that made the gopis suffer even more. They said, at least when we are traveling around in Vrindavan, we are seeing Krishna's footprints, we are seeing the Govardhan Hill, we feel bad that we are not able to see him. Now you are saying that he is within us? That means even when we close our eyes and we want to not see all these places which remind us of Krishna, what can we do? He is within us. Now how can we escape from Krishna? We thought that if we meditate, then probably we'll just forget Krishna who is disturbing our minds. And in this way, they were becoming more and more ecstatic. And then finally, Uddhav gave them the message which Krishna had actually given them, the most confidential message which satisfied the gopis of Vrindavan. And then of course, the famous Bhramar Gita started. So, the point we are making here is that according to the qualification of the disciple, transcendental knowledge is given. Prabhupada explains, thus one can say that the former kingly government was like heaven and the present government is like hell. Because at present people don't even know what questions to ask. Even when we go to give transcendental knowledge, they cannot receive transcendental knowledge because the disciple is not qualified. So just like Maharaj Parikshit was tested by Shukadev Goswami and he was given transcendental knowledge. Similarly, Uddhav was also given higher and higher knowledge which satisfied the devotees of Vrindavan. Only when the utmost knowledge of Krishna's love was given to Nanda Maharaj and the gopis, then they were satisfied. So now we will see in the future verses how Jada Bharat gives transcendental knowledge to Maharaj Rahuguna, who is a qualified disciple and satisfies his heart. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. If there is any one question, we may take because it's quite late now. Anybody has any questions? We'll take Prabhuji's question. He's senior. Maybe we can. Yes, Prabhuji. Yes. Prabhuji, if you don't mind, I can hear you, but still if you can speak in the mic, then I'll be able to hear you better.
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji. Prabhuji, the most wonderful and the merciful arrangement of Krishna was that the cognizance of the bad thoughts, unless it is acted, are not taken, and on the reverse, when the good thoughts come, they are all recognized. But this arrangement of Krishna, how was it linked with Kali? I mean, this arrangement must have been there even before the Kali Yuga. So how Parikshit Maharaj could see this quality in Kali and could give him the blessings and excuse?
Okay, so it's understood and appreciated that in Kali Yuga, sinful thoughts do not have sinful reactions. In the previous yugas, even sinful thoughts had their specific reactions. In previous yugas, people's minds were so pure that they would not think sinfully. And if they did think sinfully, then even mentally thinking sinfully would make that person sinful and contaminated, even if he had not acted in a sinful manner. So, it was so subtle to behave. The laws and codes of dharma were so subtle in the previous yugas that for every action, physical or mental, the reactions were there. However, seeing the unqualified situation of the people in Kali Yuga, this is a concession given that the thoughts, sinful thoughts, will not create sinful reactions. Only when the physical action is done, then the reactions will be taken into account. So that the people of Kali Yuga will not suffer more. Already we are suffering so much because of our sinful actions. If our sinful thoughts are taken into account, then every second practically. Some psychologists and psychiatrists say that every 3 thoughts that come into the mind of a conditioned soul is a thought related to enjoying the opposite gender. So, it's so contaminated. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj, seeing that this concession is available in Kali Yuga, not only that sinful thoughts are not sinful reactions, the advantage is when you think good, especially devotional service, you get the benefit of that, even without doing that good on the physical plane. Does it answer your question? Anybody would like to add anything? Hare Krishna. So we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Grantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shila Prabhupada ki jai.